The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now it is time for Entertainment Preview to find out what's on TV and on demand for the week ahead. Joining me now remotely, our producer and presenter Owen Sweeney and pop culture journalist Jen Gannon. Good afternoon to you both. I'm just fixing my teeth in here. Owen, first of all, we were talking there about Shay Healy, and we heard in the 12 o'clock bulletin there that Lee Dunn has passed away.
That's right.
Tell us about Lee Dunn.
Yeah, Lee Dunn was quite a character. I mean, I suppose to a whole generation, he'll be remembered for one book, above all else, and that's Goodbye to the Hill, which of course became, that was released in 1965, and became a play in the late 1970s. I think it ran for something like 6 months. It was nothing short of an Irish cultural phenomenon, one of those things that we're very good at producing in this country. He also wrote, it has to be said, and your granny might be like mine, Damon, I don't know if you remember that far back, we're about the same age, the first 750 episodes of Harbour Hotel, which I know was religious listening in
hold on,
house.
I remember it.
Do you? But did you choose to listen to it? Anyway, it was for the older age group, I suppose. But so very fondly remembered author. Also, he was perennially banned back in the day. Now, the murky waters of censorship are difficult to navigate in Irish cultural history. But famously, Lee Dunn took to the Late Late Show to decry the banning of one of his books. Paddy Maguire is dead, actually, in the early 1970s. And he gave out about the censorship board, and subsequently, so the story goes, his next six novels found themselves banned as well. But he fought it, and his legal counsel at one point was the then relatively unknown Mary Robinson. So he did his bit for writing. He did his bit for I suppose, artistic freedom. He left school at 13. He was from kind of Ranelagh Rathmines area, which of course is the aforementioned the Hill area referred to in Goodbye to the Hill, a novel he wrote while he was driving a cab for, I think, about 6 years in London in the 1960s. And he was a great storyteller. He was a great writer, and a great ear for dialogue, which again is a peculiarly Irish thing, I think.
Yeah, and my producer Anne was saying out here, do you know if there was anybody to tell you about Lee Dunn, it probably would have been the late Shay Healy.
Absolutely.
And just before we move on, and Jen, I want to go to you, but first, just briefly, Owen, there is RT have put up some clips of archive of Shay.
Yeah, well, I suppose professionally I'm someone who spends a fair bit of time in the RTE archives, the programme library, although obviously given COVID you can't go in there anymore. So there's a great service provided by your colleagues in the National Broadcaster at the RTE archives website on rte.ie, but you'll find a link to the archives. They have a nice tribute there where they've collated all this Shay Healy, most of the Shay Healy clips, including himself talking to Alex Higgins in 1987. You forget how anarchic, I know you've mentioned Nighthawks a lot, but when you watch the clips back, you forget how anarchic it was. Mm. It was natural sound. There was people having conversations all around the place. You almost have to struggle to hear the interviewees. There's cans of beer on the table.
I do. I actually remember that was Evening Extra, and Shay Healy was down at Goff's around this time of the year, chasing around some of the best known snooker players at the time, grabbing interviews with him. I actually do remember that, as well as Harbour Hotel. It's one of the things that stands out in my mind. Anyway, Jen, let's start with what's happening on the box this week and Channel 4. And this looks absolutely amazing. Frank of Ireland on Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday at 10 o'clock. And I'm really looking forward to this because, firstly, it stars the most charismatic family in Ireland, the Gleesons. I mean, what is their secret? All Gleesons are involved, so there's someone for everyone. So it's written by Donal Gleeson and Brian, and it centres around Brian's character, Frank, who is this would-be musician and complete and utter man-baby who is stuck in this state of arrested development, blaming everybody else on his own misfortune. So he gets into several mishaps, and it's up to his friend Doofus, who's played by Donal, who is a complete pushover, to try and clean things up. So the show kind of charts Frank's attempt to get his life together and actually begin to grow up at the age of 33. So, I mean, it's a surreal edge comedy sitcom, and it's produced by the brilliant Sharon Horgan, who we know from Catastrophe. And not only does it feature their dad, Brendan Gleeson, but it's also got the great Sarah Green from Normal People. Pam Boyd is in it, and she plays Frank's acerbic, despairing mother. And it's also got cameos from everybody from Pat Short and Tom Von Lawler. It just looks ridiculous, and it looks like really good fun. It has that very over the top frantic quality of something like Black Books, but also that kind of real Irish warmth of something like Moon Boy or Derry Girls. So I'm really excited to see this.
And that's on Channel 4 on Thursday.
At 10 o'clock, yeah.
At 10 o'clock. Okay, Owen, there's a concluding episode tonight about another Irish family. Now, it's a slightly different type of Irish family, a somewhat dysfunctional one. RT1 television drama Smother comes to an end. I haven't watched it, but you're laughing there, but is this the modern day JR sort of whodunit?
It is absolutely a whodunit, and the thing is, anyone could have done it, if that's a phrase. I didn't count up how many characters there are. I watched all 5 episodes. You'll be damn sure I'm going to watch the 6th one tonight to find out if we do find out who killed Dennis Ahern, who is the patriarch of the Ahern family, who are based in County Clare. It's filmed in Lahinch. I don't think they refer to it as Lahinch by name, although there is a street sign saying Lahinch at one point, so I suppose we take it as based in the real world. The family are anything but real, I suppose. They have everything going on. It's a blended family. It has a family that is struggling with fatal diagnosis, mental illness, alcoholism, you name it. It's their pregnancy. It's an imminent pregnancy almost happening in the car at the end of the last episode. Spoiler alert. Dodgy property developments and anything you can throw at it. Everyone's a suspect. The father at the start, there was a birthday party. He ends up at the foot of a cliff. It is clear, as I say. We don't know if he fell. We don't know if he was pushed. Everyone, as I say, is a suspect. The man played by Dervla Kerwin, who basically carries the whole thing. Or sorry, she's the fulcrum around which it all revolves, should I say. She's almost in every scene. She's either trying to find out the truth or cover up for her children to try to keep the whole family together. I don't know, Damien, where I was on the night that Dennis Ahern fell at the bottom of the cliff. But there's so many suspects, I'm pretty sure I could have done it.
All right, okay, Jen, sticking with Irish themes, Irish actor, Aidan Turner, he's starring in a new drama about Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, Poldark is back. So this is on Amazon Prime. It starts on Friday. And he might not be shirtless in a field this time, but he has grown a very impressive beard that looks like he's had a very tough lockdown. So this is created by sometime Doctor Who and Sherlock writer Stephen Thompson and Frank Spotnitz, who was responsible for the very opulent Renaissance drama Medici. And it's a really lavish affair that delves into the life of the 15th century polymath. So as we know, you know, artist, scientist, astronomer, botanist, I think, you know, he did it all. He was a busy boy, was Leonardo. So, but it kind of flips around his life. So when you first encounter him, he's imprisoned. He's accused of poisoning his muse, Caterina di Cremona. And she's played by Matilda de Angelis. So she was in The Undoing. You'd know her from that. But so this kind of frames the story as a murder mystery, which, you know, is perhaps kind of to try and hook viewers in. So just be warned, be prepared that it's not a straightforward biopic. It's more of a romp with like these dramatic, fantastical elements, considering that a lot of Leonardo scholars argue over whether Caterina actually existed. They just think she was made up by biographers. So that's the kind of fantastical element to it. But from there, it kind of travels back to his early days and the opposition he came across as this free thinker and idealist. So you get the hint of the genius to come and the stories around the creation of his masterpieces and a nod to his sexual ambiguity. I guess it's kind of like a Renaissance Sherlock in a way. You're following this genius who is obsessive and inquisitive and an individualist who kind of just found other people to be a hindrance to his genius. So I guess if you're into that kind of historic but not so historic, a little bit fantastical stuff, it's fun. It's more fun than a straightforward biopic, put it that way.
All right, that's Leonardo on Amazon Prime on Friday. Owen, you want to go down the comedy route now at Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, I think it's worth the mention. If you... Actually, I was only reflecting. I think the one time I met Lee Dunn was when I was working for another radio station many, many years ago. He came in to be interviewed. I was lucky enough to meet him that day. And another kind of he was very much known, but an unknown comedy troupe came to that self-same radio station. This is going back about 15, 16, 17 years before their even BBC radio series had started. Were the two Flights of the Conchords lads, Brett and Jermaine, these New Zealand musical comedy duo. They were based in London then, and they did a radio series. Then they decided to move to America, try and crack America with their musical comedy. And HBO took them on. And the first series is starting again on Sky Comedy. It's tonight at 10:30. If you want complete diversion from what's going on at the moment, I can't prescribe this more highly. There are two series. It's well worth a look. If you've seen it already, watch it again. If you haven't seen it, watch it and see if you like it. Rhys Darby, actually the third wheel in this particular ensemble, is I suppose he threatens to steal the whole show as their manager, part-time manager and full-time employee of the New Zealand consulate. And their affectionate ribbing of New Zealand that I think will kind of resonate with Irish people who, yeah. who kind of, you know, as I think you mentioned about Shaheely earlier, that self-deprecation that we have as Irish people as well. The Kiwis have it about themselves, but, you know, only about themselves. If anyone else does it, you know, form a defensive circle fairly quickly.
Yeah, we'll soon let them know about that. I actually watched Flight Attendant. That was a good diversion, I have to say. I quite enjoyed that. A couple of texts in here, by the way. Lots of 80s school children will remember Harbour Hotel. It aired at lunchtime and I listened daily as my school was very close to my home. That's from Frank in Limerick. And then Damien says, I'm only 43 and I remember Harbour Hotel. But it's not that long ago at all. So Damien, in Galway, especially for you. That was it. Okay, now, you see, you were saying there we mightn't have had any interest in it, but we all knew it. It was the only bloody thing that was on.
Absolutely.
There was nothing else to go on to.
But anyway, my granny had it on.
Okay,
it on the house.
And mine too. Now, Jen, back to something I'm really looking forward to. BBC Four on Wednesday, Watergate.
Yeah, now I hope this goes ahead with the whole changing of the schedule with Prince Philip's death. But apparently it should go ahead, hopefully. BBC Four on Wednesday at 9 o'clock. So, like, really with the recent death of G. Gordon Liddy, he served 5 years in prison for his part in the Watergate scandal. BBC Four have decided to repeat Mick Gold's award-winning documentary that re-examines the whole affair from the break-in to the cover-up to the disclosure and Nixon's impeachment. It's not a new documentary, and, you know, it's not a new story, obviously, but there's something about coming back to look at the downfall of Nixon in the light of Trump's exit, which makes Nixon's fumblings and dirty dealings look, you know, positively sophisticated and urbane at this stage. So I think the national nightmare of Watergate is really imprinted on the American psyche, and you know about it through even pop culture references from everything to, like, the X-Files to the Simpsons. And if you ever wanted to piece this scandal together properly, this is the most comprehensive documentary about Tricky Dicky, Deep Throat, and the moral squalor and corruption of American politics in the 1970s. It's slow motion Exacta replays that features interviews with nearly all of the principal players apart from Nixon himself, archival footage, and it has that famous White House tape recordings. And I just think it's one of the only, you know, probably the pinnacle of documentaries about Watergate that there is.
Well, speaking of reeling in the years in political terms, the actual reeling in the years, the 20 teens is finally back, or back, it's here for the first time later on this evening. Owen.
Yes, get your nostalgia on. There's been a lot of talk about this. You'll have seen the ads on almost near constant rotation, rightly so. It's I think it's the most successful. I don't know how you judge these things so objectively necessarily, but if you're going to, by various criteria, reeling in the years is one of the most successful things that RT have put together. 10 years on, we're starting to look back at 2010 tonight. And, you know, it is a long time ago. We are all locked up at the moment. But so perhaps looking back at the year of austerity and the bailout, etc. of 2010 might actually evoke some sort of perverse nostalgia. Chilean miners, Tipperary beating Kilkenny and defeating their drive for five. The coalition government in the UK, the death of Gerry Ryan, of course. I mean, when you list them all off, it sounds like you're rewriting We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, but it'll be much better and much more musical than that. Yeah. Interesting footnote, actually, because Jen mentioned it there. Next week's episode, of course, 2011. And 2011 was when the British Royals came to Ireland. So that's kind of going to assume a weird topicality, I suppose, the day after the funeral.
Absolutely, indeed, it will.
And can I just say, Damien, it's on the player for the first time ever as well.
All right. But it's on RT1 tonight.
It's on RT1 tonight at 8:30.
8:30. How many people will say this evening, God, was that 10 years ago? Yeah. I can't believe that was 10 years ago. God, that only seems like
yesterday. Rubber Bandits as well.
Doing a lot of that. Well, it's been great chatting to you. Look forward to watching many of those suggestions from both of you. Owen Sweeney and Jen Gannon, thank you as always for joining us with a look ahead to what we can enjoy on the box over the next few days. Today's programme, by the way, was produced by Anne Farland, research Katrina McFadden, broadcasting coordinator Bridget Nicholas, and on sound was Mark Dwyer. And to end today's programme, a great piece played on Arena during the week to mark the launch of a series of concerts at the National Concert Hall. The recording is by Argentinian tango master Astor Piazzolla and features the Irish Chamber Orchestra and accordion player Dermot Dunn. I leave you this afternoon with Piazzolla, Libre Tango. Until we talk to you again in this slot, have a great remainder of this Sunday, and Brendan will be back next Saturday. I've enjoyed your company. Good afternoon.